For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Kevin's Take. The good, the bad, and the ugly from yesterday's Washington Commanders game.
Let's go! Let's go!
Here's Kevin.
Austin Hekeler, one of the new additions, and Jeremy Nichols, the running back. Game two is happening in Washington. It's Hekeler. Straight ahead, Austin Hekeler. There's a flag down, and he's outrunning Goodell. But that flag is back inside the 40 of Washington as he is into the end zone for an opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Yeah, it looked good to start. It certainly felt like, look out, here we go. Unfortunately, that was returned thanks to a Nick Ballore hold, one of the two penalties that he had on special teams in his first game. That was the only time we had an offensive player in the end zone with the ball in his hands all day. That was a special teams return, not an offensive player. Only time with the football for anybody in the end zone, the scoring end zone, not your own end zone, all day long. You know, Eckler's been really good so far this season. Unfortunately, that was called back. A 21-18 win over the Giants. The 21 points, not the normal way, of three touchdowns and three PATs, seven field goals by new kicker Austin Seibert, who, get this, is represented, his agent is Dave Butts Jr. Yes, that Dave Butts, his son, number 65, one of the greatest to ever do it along the D-line for the Burgundy and Gold. Some of you who play golf occasionally refer to a bogey on a par five where you're getting a shot as a Dave Butts, as in a 6-5. That probably sailed over the heads of many of you, but a few of you got it, so that's fine. I was reading in David Aldridge's column on Austin Seibert's debut. I had no idea, but he detailed the fact that Austin's grandfather and Dave Butts' father, or Butts Jr.'s grandfather, they grew up on the same street in Bellevue, Illinois, and they've been family friends, and Austin Seibert uses Dave Butts' son, Dave Butts Jr., as his agent. You know who Dave Butts' best friend on the team was during his days and who he rode to every single game with? The kicker, Mark Moseley. Great day by Seibert. His sixth field goal was actually the one that set the franchise record for made field goals in a game. No Skins kicker had ever kicked more than five in a game. It was the first time since 2009 yesterday that Washington won a game without scoring a touchdown. They beat the Rams 9-7 in week two back in 2009 during, of course, the storied Jim Zorn era. I'll never forget that game because Tommy and I were doing the Jim Zorn weekly show. We were in our studio out at Redskins Park. Jim Zorn walked in, and one of my questions was about whether or not he was concerned about his job after they had won a game. And he looked at me like he wanted to kill me, and I explained to him afterwards. I said, we've been around here for a while. We understand that the way it looked yesterday, despite it being a win, and the way it started the week before, and the rumors were already swirling about him. But anyway, all right, let's get to the game take. What I liked, what I didn't like, few other observations from the game. Then your chance, which will come right around 11 a.m. So you don't have to start lining up on the phones now. I know some of you are there, but we'll start taking calls in the 11 a.m. hour. Ben Standing will be with us at 12, and we'll go around the NFL a little bit later on in the program. All right, what I liked. Number one on the list is no kicker for the Giants. I mean, come on. Brian Daboll deserves everything that's coming his way in New York today, from sports talk hosts, from columnists, the whole thing. Graham Gano wasn't 100% heading into the game. This is the key issue. If you're a Giant fan and you look at this, and as a fan of our team, it was critical that incompetence took over, because Graham Gano was a late add to the injury report on Saturday with a groin issue. They decided not to activate the kicker that they've got on the practice squad, which was mistake number one. Mistake number two was not using their punter, once they decided not to activate the other kicker, to handle kickoffs once they didn't bring the practice kicker up. Gano, during pregame warmups, had to go back into the locker room. He was reporting discomfort, and they had to wrap his groin. And then they put him out there to kick the ball off anyway. They had plenty of time to do something before yesterday, on Saturday, knowing what they knew about Gano's condition on Saturday. And once they didn't do that, they didn't even save themselves by having a contingency plan with the punter kicking off, at least. Maybe the punter couldn't kick off, but my God, you talk about incompetence. Like, it's bad luck if a healthy kicker gets hurt in a game. It's incompetence if you don't have a contingency plan for an unhealthy kicker. That massive mistake by the Giants head coach and or special teams coach was the number one determining factor in the game. Thank you, Brian Daboll. Number two on the list, Jaden Daniels. I mean, this, I'm going to get through this. It's going to take a little bit of time. But, I mean, there was so much to his performance. Let me not bury the lead. I gave him an A for yesterday. A B last week, I give him an A for yesterday. And let me preface what I'm going to say. There are plays that he had that he could have made, and more of them will be revealed, you know, by the All-22. And, you know, my non-expert opinion will be in play tomorrow. I'm sure along with all of the non-players that are out there doing film breakdown, I'm sure you can take those to the bank. But I would guess, and I'm going to give you a few plays, hunches on a few plays that maybe he should have let it fly, that there were some plays that were there to be made that he didn't make. You can say that, by the way, every week about almost every quarterback. But I'll save that for the back half of this Jaden Daniels evaluation. I want to start with the positives because they way outnumber the negatives. I'll start with this. He's so poised. He's so calm. He's so in control. He appears to be totally comfortable already playing quarterback at the NFL level. Nothing appears to be too big for him right now. That could change, okay? I don't think his demeanor, for 226 yards, no interceptions, that's key. No interceptions, no turnovers through the first 2 weeks. He nearly had one last week on the sack fumble, but Tyler Biadasz jumped on it. 7.8 yards per pass attempt yesterday. That's pretty damn good. He took 5 sacks. I don't know how many of them were on him. I've got some thoughts on those 5 coming up in a few minutes. But here's the good news on those sacks. This is something Denton and I talked about all offseason when people were highlighting his pressure to sack percentage as a major, major problem, along with his inability to throw across the middle, which you saw yesterday when it mattered most. Is 5 sacks, but just 21 yards of lost yardage. And this was really important and something we highlighted during the offseason at LSU. He had the lowest lost yardage average on sacks of any of the quarterbacks that were projected to go in the first round. The average yards lost on sacks yesterday, just over 4 yards, barely over 4 yards. He just does an excellent job of escaping big lost yardage plays and working his way with his mobility back towards the line of scrimmage. You know, I do, again, wonder how many of the 5 sacks he could have unloaded the ball, because I think it's at least 2 of them. But the lost yardage is a good sign on those sacks. You know, sacks and penalties are the biggest drive killers. But usually, after a sack or a penalty, just go back to last year, you end up with, you know, 2nd and 18, 2nd and 16, 2nd and 20, you know, 3rd and 19. It doesn't happen that much with him because, now, penalties you can't control, and there were too many of those. His best plays, in my opinion, let's first go through some of the throws. I loved some of the RPO decisions and some of the throws off the RPO. RPO, remember, read pass option, run pass option, not read option. Run pass option is when he's either leaving it in the gut of the runner or he's quickly throwing it outside, typically, to a receiver. Linemen can't be more than a yard downfield. They got caught for it on one of the RPOs. So the release, the decision's got to be super quick, and then the release has to be out super quick. 3rd and 1, opening drive, part of that long opening drive, the right decision because they were playing soft on Dami Brown, and he gets it out quickly. It's a 5-yard completion, moves the sticks. He had some really good decisions not to throw on some of the RPO stuff and instead give the ball to the back. This is, you know, this is 101 in college football, you know, RPO football. He's very comfortable. He sees it, and he's got such a quick release, and he can really throw accurately that they're effective in some of that, and they were yesterday. I loved the throw after he got the wind knocked out of him, a play we'll talk about. How about coming back in after the one play that Jeff Driscoll was in on, and he throws an in-timing slant to Terry McLaurin. Fit it perfectly between the corner and the dropping linebacker. Loved the throw to Noah Brown in the fourth quarter. Not the big one on the final drive, but the play-action slant for 15 yards. Go watch that play. Super quick processing. He goes left to center to right and then hits Brown, who goes to the ground with the catch. I actually thought it was thrown well enough. You know, maybe I'll see something differently. I thought it was thrown well enough for him to catch it in stride and maybe score. The perfectly designed Kingsbury play on the final drive, on the next to last drive, excuse me, the next to last drive, where he rolls out right and then throws back to Eckler for a big 27-yard play that got him down to the 6-yard line. Love that play, but the throw has to be really well thrown, led perfectly, have some zip on it so Eckler can take advantage with the run after catch of the defense chasing after the quarterback on the pocket moving right. And then that final throw to Noah Brown on 2nd and 10, you know, after Brian Robinson got stacked up at the line of scrimmage, that was following the 4th and 4 neighbors drop. It's a big play in the game, you know, and it's 34 yards, and it's just, it's a perfect throw. And again, you know, I think a lot of the criticism, he can't throw over the middle. He doesn't want to throw over the middle. We talked about some of the reasons why. They were such a prolific first and second down offense at LSU. They just didn't have a lot of those 3rd and 5s, 3rd and 6s where you end up throwing over the middle. So we always thought in discussing that there was a bit misleading. And if you watched him last year, you know he can stand in the pocket and throw the ball over the middle. And that throw to Brown on the last drive was massive. How about some of his runs? The 3rd and 10 scramble for 9.5 yards that set up the 4th and 1. He was decisive with pressure. That was which drive was that? That was the Yeah, that was the opening drive. You know, it's third and 10. He's, you know, the pressure comes. He immediately is decisive, gets downfield, then cuts it back and nearly gets the first down. Actually, they ruled it a first down, and then the challenge was on the spot, and the Giants won that challenge. How about the scramble where he took off, where he took the shot and got the wind knocked out of him? That's third and 13, people. He's not going to protect himself as much in those spots when he is trying to move the sticks on third and 13. It's called football. He got the first down with a 14-yard scramble. I love that play. A first and 15 late in the first half. He escapes and runs for 9 yards, gets out of bounds. That was such great feel in the pocket. He avoided a sack in the third quarter by escaping pressure and getting back to the line of scrimmage. That would have been typical of a play last year at LSU. If he had lost a yard, it would have actually, you know, been called a sack, but he got it back to the line of scrimmage. Again, incredible feel in the pocket on that one. And then that read option keeper on the final drive. You didn't see as many read option keepers. You saw read option, but you saw more runs. And a lot of that is the 3-4 base defense, and we talked about that on Friday. But that last one, they actually blocked up really well, too. Got out of bounds, got a first down. Had no problem, by the way, with him going out of bounds there at the end because he got in a first down. So, you know, the effort to stay in bounds to force another timeout or to keep the clock rolling isn't as important when you're going and you get the first down by tight roping that, you know, sideline and then protecting yourself at the end. So there are a couple of other things that, you know, and I do want to get to some of the negatives with him from my standpoint. First of all, I think he seems totally in control at the line of scrimmage. There's a third and 14 on that opening drive where he checks to an Eckler run against a light box. You could tell that was a check. It's third and 13. They probably have, you know, hey, we're going to throw it towards the end zone, try to get a first down or try to get a touchdown if they're coming after you. But if it's a light box and they're playing conservatively, we're going to check to Eckler. He got 13 yards on that run, and they had a fourth and one. They were going to go for it before that first of many red zone penalties on the day. I love that. I thought he looked in total control at the line of scrimmage. There are a couple of things. Okay, first of all, just the sacks real quickly before I've had a chance, you know, and I say I've had a chance. I mean, I'll look at the All-22 today. I actually can't wait to watch it for the sacks. Hardly an expert opinion. But, you know, some of you guys, too, you can pick up on certain things. But I also would love to hear, you know, Quinn talk about maybe some of them today. But I thought that the first one, there were two of them, there were four of them in the first half, one in the second half. And I thought the first one where he lost 3 yards, McFadden's blitzing, I don't think he picked up the blitz there. I don't think he saw it. I don't think he read the blitz. He escaped and got away from McFadden and others and turned it into a 3-yard loss when it could have been much bigger. That's something he does. But I have a feeling that that was not, you know, that may have been on him. He also had a 5-yard sack. Not sure if it was like a quick screen. I don't know why he didn't throw it. It was they were on the move. It was their second drive, I believe, and he took he scrambled out of getting sacked, but still lost 5 yards when he got tackled on the sideline. It looked like a screen setup, and it looked like it was kind of there, but he just decided not to throw it. And then I think he was in trouble because you probably had linemen down the field on the quick bubble. I thought the biggest loss, the biggest sack of the day, the third and 6, where he lost 7 on their second drive, I thought that he could have thrown the football. I also thought the O-line got beat quickly, but I thought the ball had a chance to come out to at least the receiver that was running kind of a dig on the left sideline, and I forget who that was. He had Wiley got beat on the second half sack pretty quickly, so I thought that was more O-line. But there was one other thing that I just wanted to point out as just, you know, a constructive critique. I said last week on the play in which he fumbled after being sacked on that third quarter drive that he backed up in the pocket. He backed himself into a sack instead of stepping up. I have noticed, even yesterday, there are just a couple of times, and even on positive plays and positive throws, I think there are more opportunities, and even just a tiny, you know, sort of fading back a little bit. I would bet that that's something that they're working with him on. It was not an issue. I think he's perhaps waiting maybe a little bit for receivers to get open. But if you notice on a lot of the throws, even some that he completed, there's not a true step up into a pocket that's been created. So just a very small nit to pick. But I noticed it last week when he stepped out of the pocket, stepped backwards. You'd never want that. You know, your offensive tackles are, you know, they've got a certain depth, which they're blocking, you know, Wiley's trying to block Thibodeau as an example too. If that quarterback steps beyond that depth, it's on the quarterback. So that would be... That would just be one small nit to pick. Overall, though, my God, come on, man. His playmaking ability, his arm, his decision-making, the final drive, a performance for the quarterback. All right, other things that I liked from the game yesterday. How about 7-for-7 on drives? I know, no touchdowns, but no punts in the game. The red zone failures aren't good. You're not going to probably win the games by going 0-for-6 in the red zone. But still, no punts in a game? 7-of-14 on third down, 1-for-1 on fourth down? You'll take that kind of between-the-20s production every single week. The first drive in particular, a beauty. Now, they got helped out like they did last week on their first scoring drive. There was a 3rd-and-9 defensive hold against Ertz. It was a good call. But that first drive, 16 plays, 64 yards, 9 minutes and 36 seconds elapsed. You'd like it to end in touchdown, but still, when you hold on to the ball to start the game for 9 minutes and 36 seconds, and you keep the opposing defense on a warm day on the field for 16 plays, it was a harbinger of things to come. Washington, 37 minutes, 22 seconds to 22 minutes, 28 seconds in time of possession. 22:38, I guess. That was really important in the win. 425 total yards of offense, 6.2 yards per play. Yes, we'll take that every week. They rushed the ball for 215 yards. Credit to the quarterback. Credit to the two running backs. And yes, credit to the offensive line. They're physical in the run game. They were yesterday. And that defense is talented, especially in their front seven. But make no mistake about what they're going to be as a rush offense, I think, a lot of Sundays this year. The quarterback being dual threat, being able to present himself as a potential runner on any down, is a game changer for any offense, especially when the quarterback is as much of a threat as Jaden Daniels is. Everybody benefits from his ability to be a runner or presented as a runner on every play, and kudos to the coordinator for leveraging that threat. I give Kingsbury kudos yesterday. Quick game early, got Jaden into it, got his best players touches early in the game, Terry and Robinson Jr. on the first two plays, even though they weren't super productive. Again, the lethal rush offense. I loved the multiple formations, lots of quarterback, you know, positioning, under center, shotgun, pistol. The motion, you know, seemed like a bit more, but I'd have to go back and watch it again. I loved some of the play designs, especially that throwback to Eckler on the next to last drive. Seems like they did a much better job of getting people open. Maybe Noah Brown had something to do with it, or maybe it was just not as good a secondary as the one they faced last week. The penalties in the red zone, of course, need to be fixed. But so far, from my perspective, pretty good with Cliff. Brian Robinson Jr. on the list of things that I like. This guy's in for a big season, a career day. Did you see the shot he took at last year's offense? He said it was nice to get the ball 17 times for once, and it was just 17 for 133. His best run was that short yardage break and off to the races. He is a load. Austin Eckler, the shiftiness, the ability to really, with great vision, and by the way, great strength, lower body strength, to make people miss and then to break off of tackles. He is outstanding so far. Their two backs are really the strength, along with the quarterback right now, of the team offensively. Austin Seibert, obviously on the list of things that I liked. What were the odds of 7 field goals in a game? But how about this? What were the odds of 6 of the 7 being chip shot, 33 yards or less? He had 5 field goals in the 4 field goals in the 20s. I mean, that's going to lead us into a red zone conversation, of course, when we get to the bad things from the game. But off the street and into the record books for Seibert. None of the kicks were stressful at all. And pretty much all of them split the uprights. Pretty good operation. Kudos and credit to Larry Izzo, the special teams coach, Tyler Ott, the long snapper, Tress Way, the holder. You know, everything was super smooth. Let's hope it stays that way. You know, he was 45 of 56 on field goals in his career heading into yesterday. That was not the problem. The problem for him was PATs, extra points. He missed 6 in 17 games with Cleveland, the team that drafted him. He hasn't missed one yet here. Of course, he hasn't attempted one either. For those wondering, he was one short of the NFL record held by Rob Baronis for the Titans back in 2007. He joined 9 other kickers in the history of the game who have had 7 in one game. One other quick thing on Seibert. He had 7 kickoffs. 6 of them were returned. I don't know if that was the plan or not. But there were 6 kickoff returns in the game yesterday. I thought Noah Brown was really, really outstanding, getting separation in his first game. I thought Ertz was outstanding in the game. Defensively, I'm going to mention 2 players. Benjamin St. Juice's punch-out was a monster play in the game. The Giants were on the move and potentially headed towards a 2-score lead. And then Frankie Louvu, he just flies around. He is super athletic. He hits hard. He had that helmet-to-helmet on Neighbors early in the game. But I do like what I've seen from Louvu. But look, the defense, pretty porous for a second straight week. The list of things I didn't like when we come back.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Few other observations and then your calls at 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.